Ladies and gentlemen, you know what that sound means. It means it is episode 118 of the Personal Arrogance Podcast, coming to you live from Seattle, Washington, and a mystery location, which we will get to very shortly. Jesse is gone this week because he's staring at a baby that is a significant other just had. So apparently that's more important than the podcast. But this week we have a very special guest. Go ahead and reveal yourself, special guest.
A'Ron Hubbard.
A'Ron. Right here. A'Ron from the Bald Move Network, fan favorite A'Ron.
Broadcasting live from the Bald Tower in the beautiful Midwest coast.
Yes. Excellent. I thank you so much for joining me so late at night.
Hey, no problem.
This is a late night cast for you.
Yeah, I was going to be sitting around drinking beer anyway, so I figured, what the hell?
Yeah, what the hell? So I think everybody, first of all, is dying to know, A'Ron, how was your Halloween?
It was pretty good. I had like a double Halloween this year.
I had
the weekend before Halloween with my boy. Mm-hmm. And he dressed up as Mega Man. And it was a really sweet costume. I built him a PVC arm cannon.
Excellent.
I got him blue boots and light blue thermal underwear and a nice bright blue helmet. Uh-huh. And I'm thinking, what am I going to go as?
Uh-huh.
And then it hit me. I've got to go as Dr. Light, right?
Oh, you have to.
So I borrowed my dad. My dad used to work for a dental laboratory, so he had a lab coat to give me. I got a Santa Claus beard and wig. I threw on a tie and a little Dr. Light name badge, and boom,
we were ready
to hit the town.
Are there any pictures of this?
I do. I've got some pictures. I need to post them on Facebook. I'm a little bit behind.
Put them on Facebook. Put it on the Facebook.
And put on a Facebook.
Put it on the Facebook. See, I haven't really had my Halloween yet because it's kind of a weird when Halloween falls on a Wednesday. You get
it's
like the Halloween.
Really tough.
Yeah. So we went out to karaoke last weekend. That was kind of a dud because apparently like everyone in Seattle decided to go to this karaoke joint.
Oh yeah, is that the famous
the Baranoff?
The Baranoff, exactly.
Yeah, the Baranoff. Early recommendation for the Baranoff any night of the week. Thursdays, Fridays, and Sundays, check out Patty, the karaoke master. so we went there. It was really crowded. But then this weekend we have our party. And we've got some sweet like 1980s-inspired ski chalet costumes. First year is a couple costumes. But that's part of the engaged life is a couple costume.
Sure, sure.
Yeah. So, we'll do it this weekend. But then Jesse had a baby on Halloween.
How cool is that?
Halloween baby.
It's kind of I feel sorry for his little girl because
I don't know.
It always sucks when you stack up on a holiday like that.
It sucks when you're on Christmas, right?
Yeah,
it's terrible for Christmas. I don't know if it's that terrible for Halloween.
Well, but you get all the gifts and birthday cake, and then you're going to go out and trick or treat. That's like diabetes waiting to happen.
It is. <It's... laughs> But just imagine at every she could throw the Halloween party every year and have birthday cake at a Halloween party.
That's pretty cool. And a costume
and everyone's
birthday
a costume.
Party every year.
Yes. That's
yeah,
pretty
that's
sweet.
Pretty cool.
Yes.
Stock up on insulin, Jesse. That's all you need to do.
Exactly. So speaking of that, A'Ron, who is this episode dedicated to?
We have to dedicate, and I don't know her name yet. The newborn warrior princess on Sam Hine, she was delivered unto us, and her name is
Elsa Blue Wilson.
Just shy of 9 pounds, 22 inches long.
22 inches long, lightweight compared to Walkwith standards, but we'll give it to him.
Really?
Yeah.
The Hubbard babies are all heavyweights too.
How heavy is a Hubbard baby?
Well, see now, my brother tipped the scales at 9 pounds. I was 9 and a half, and my sister. Was a healthy 10 pounds, 7 ounces.
Still weak sauce, A'Ron.
Really?
12 pounds, 5 ounces, Eric
Walquist. Oh, my God.
Dropped into this planet with a thud.
Yes, you did.
Yes, I did.
Your mom gave birth to a butterball turkey.
Yeah, absolutely.
Jesus.
Yeah, wow. So I'm still rocking. When I was born, they had me in the delivery in that, the room, the viewing room, the zoo thing.
Right.
And everybody was like, yeah, looks like the Seahawks got a new linebacker. But But anyway, we're very happy for Jesse, and hopefully he'll be back on the podcast at some point in his life. But until then, we got plenty of great guest hosts lined up.
Sweet.
Starting with you, Aaron. So I guess now is the time for what are you drinking?
I am drinking the famous Bell's Two-Hearted Ale out of Bell's Brewery out of Comstock, Michigan. Mm-hmm. It's Indian Pale Ale, well-suited for adventurous trips to Upper Peninsula. American malts and enormous hop additions give this beer a crisp finish and an incredibly floral hop aroma.
Excellent.
And it is by far my favorite IPA.
See, I when you came over here for PAX, and we, you brought a ton of beer with you, so much so that we couldn't even drink it all.
Right.
And I think that the Midwest coast is kind of like a mysterious realm, because out here in the Northwest, it's a great beer mecca, but every brewery is kind of established now. There are these small breweries that have, you know, they have this legacy, but it seems like the Midwest coast is a little bit of the Wild West of craft beer right now, and I'm digging it.
Yeah, you guys have to come out here because we've got some crazy stuff.
Maybe Gen Con next year.
Telling you.
Well, this week
right
I'm,
here.
Yeah, this week I'm drinking a hot toddy.
Do you ran out of beer, eh?
Ran out of beer. Do you know what the hot toddy consists of?
I don't know. I feel like even if I did, there'd be regional differences.
I think it's whiskey.
Oh.
Bourbon.
Mm-hmm.
And then tea and lemon and a hint of lemon and then some honey. So
wow. So you're going to ready to stave off a sore throat in addition to
exactly.
Getting your drink on.
Well, Lydia's sick. So, you know, we gotta help her out and get drunk.
Yeah.
And we got to kill two birds with one stone.
That should do it.
Yeah. So Aaron, I want to move on to some excellent listener feedback we got this week.
I can't wait.
And I'm excited about this because, believe it or not, it actually includes you. And I have to give a shout out to Roger Doetze because he is he's become a fervent fan of the Personal Arrogance podcast. But obviously, like many of our listeners, came to us through the Bald Move Network when we joined, which we're super stoked about. And I just want to read a little bit of this. He says, I had known for many months that Aaron Hubbard was my favorite podcaster. I, like many others, got way into Game of Thrones on HBO and was looking for a solid GOT cast. I found The Night's Watch, smart, witty, funny, insightful. Then I found The Watching Dead. Aaron was back giving me some good indie insight. About a month ago, I decided to pursue the Bald Move site, and lo and behold, there's a new podcast. I thought, no Aaron yet. Don't know how I feel about that, but that tagline about bridging the gap between two of my favorite cultures had me intrigued. Thought I'd give it a listen, so I booted up Edward Norton as a Muppet Baby. Excellent episode, and I'm glad I did. So this one goes out to you, Roger Doetze. And Roger, he sent us an email. There's a bunch of talking points in it, and we will get back to you eventually, Robert. He also says that he wants to get in touch with the show fairly regularly, so please do check in. But Robert also decided to give us a call, so I want to play his voicemail, and he's got a question for us. Hopefully we can give him some insight. So I'm going to play that right now.
Spin it.
Hey, guys. This is Roger Doetze from Louisville, Kentucky. I'd like your help with something. I have a lovely wife. She's wonderful. She's absolutely great. She's really cool, too. She watches The Walking Dead with me. She loves horror movies. She'll play Wii with me every once in a while. But the problem is she's just not nearly as nerdy as I am. And I don't know if I get my dose of nerdage as much as I would like. The main aspect of this crossover is the board games. I had no idea this world of board games that you guys have. And I, basically listening to your cast, I thought more board games were Risk, Monopoly, Trivial Pursuit, yada, yada, yada. I didn't realize that there were this whole trove of board games, these Settlers of Catan, this Arkham Horror, all this stuff sounds so fascinating, but I don't know if my wife is nerdy enough. So, or my friends. So I just wanted to see what you recommended, if there's any fun board games that I can get into that I can maybe get my non-nerdy wife into, or a way that I can convince her to play some of the nerdy type board games. Anyway, just wanted to see what y'all thought, and I really appreciate you doing this every week, and have a good one. Bye.
Bye, Roger. Thanks for giving us a call. What do you think, Aaron?
I think he should try withholding sex.
Oh, geez.
Until she tries that first board game.
Aaron, I don't know if that works both ways.
Really?
The Lysistrata thing is...
That's why I have been so unsuccessful.
Oh, man.
I think you guys made a lot of solid suggestions on that cast that you talked about board games. I mean, I will have to second Carcassonne.
Carcassonne is great. Carcassonne is great. I think we actually had a Facebook follower, one of our Facebook followers brought the same question up as to how do you kind of get in the board games? And there's a few that I would really recommend. Carcassonne is one of them. Settlers of Catan is another one. Citadels, I think, is a great board game. It takes a little bit to understand it, but it's a really good intro board game. Probably leaning a little more toward the nerdy side, but another one I can't recommend enough is Bang.
I was about to say Bang. If you have like a mixed group,
yeah,
5 to 6 to 7 friends, it's a great time because it's got a neat flavor. It's like a Wild West spaghetti Western flavor. Mm-hmm. You've got like, you know, some buddy fucking, which is also a basis, a good time. Plus, you get to say you're banging people all the time.
Right. I bang you.
Always puts a smile on my face.
Always puts a smile on your face. And I would recommend only getting the base set of Bang. There are expansions, but you really only need the base set, which you can get for around $10 online, I think.
Yeah.
That was Greg Ross, one of our listeners, wrote in about board game recommendations. I'd also throw in there Zuloretto. I don't know if you played Zuloretto, Aaron.
I have not.
But that's a great game. It's got a great theme. And also Ticket to Ride I'd say Ticket to Ride is very similar to those base board games that you're talking about with a little more strategy.
Yes. But I'll go so far as to recommend skip the American version, get the European version.
Yeah. Yeah, Ticket to Ride Europe is really good. And then you can get into stuff. I know that Jesse has been really him and Tasha have been really getting into Agricola, which is a great game.
It's a great game, but boy, it's a lot.
Lot, though. So start on those starters. Start on your Settlers of Catan, your Citadels, your Carcassonne, your Bang. Power Grid's also good. Ticket to Ride's really good. And then get into your more advanced games, which are your Agricola. Puerto Rico's a great game, but it's also very advanced.
Right. And actually, if you're going to do Puerto Rico, I'd say try Race for the Galaxy.
Yeah. I haven't played that game.
It's like a streamlined version of Puerto Rico, but it maintains a lot of the same mechanics, and it's like also got a science fiction space theme. So
that's pretty legit.
You know, you're not trading slaves and trafficking in human misery like in Puerto Rico.
That's true. That is part of the game. And then there's also Battlestar Galactica. I put that on more of the advanced side.
Yes.
But I know you're a big fan of Battlestar.
I am
the board game.
That's one of my big regrets. We didn't get to play it in Seattle.
Yeah, and then if you get Battlestar is a really fun game that you don't need to know anything about the TV show to play. But
true,
then
as I do not
once you get into that, then you can use that as a nerd avenue. If it's like, hey, you love this board game, why don't you try watching Battlestar Galactica with me because it's on Netflix?
Agreed.
Then you're really getting into some stuff. Then you've started along the path.
Oh, yeah.
So hopefully we haven't led you astray. But and this goes out for all of our listeners. This is like the number one feedback we get is that people don't know what we're talking about when we talk about board games. We love board games. And all of these board games, Settlers of Catan, Citadels, Power Grid, Zuloretto, Bang, Ticket to Ride, Agricola, Puerto Rico, they're all great games. You should get out there and try them because then you'll actually understand what we talk about. You'll have more fun listening.
And I owe my board gaming renaissance entirely to you, gentlemen, because I was of the same opinion of Robert there that, you know, it's all Risk and Axis and Allies and Monopoly and boring-ass games.
Right.
And if that's what your experience with board games are, you really need to spend $30 on Amazon and get Carcassonne and Bang and blow your mind.
There you go. I also just want to quickly, we got another report from Ollie James out in England, so I have to read this in his voice. Hey, guys, thanks for reading my email out last week's show. I hadn't heard a single thing about the NFL coming to London, but have you guys heard about the big news in the UK? A celebrity called Sir Jimmy Savile died last year as a national treasure. He was a children's TV show presenter, and it has come out to be a pedophile and there's like 200 cases of people saying that Jimmy abused them. That's what's going on in the UK. Thanks, Ollie.
That's hideously depressing. You guys should have stuck with the Olympics.
Yeah, that is hideously depressing. It's I mean, we don't need to get completely into this, but I mean, it's very similar.
Can you imagine? That'd be like if, or like Mr. Rogers, you found out he was a pedo, or Captain Kangaroo.
I think that Jimmy Savile is more like a Dick Clark type of guy.
It wouldn't be that bad.
Well, it's more, he's kind of like a national treasure. I heard about it on NPR a little bit, but he basically was like the great guy from the BBC, and the BBC is kind of, because it's actually run by the British government. So there's weird stuff going on there. I think it's very similar to kind of the tarnishing of the Penn State football program by, we have our own pedophile cases over here in the U.S.
Oh yeah.
So yeah, thanks for bringing the cast down, Ollie, and thanks for your report from London. And please feel free to email us anytime and just let us know what's going on in the UK. We'd love to have a UK show. So I think that's good. I think we need to move on to our little Tiny Matt roll-off. Just want to let people know, if you want to give us a call, please do at 360-362-0024. Aaron, do you have your die ready?
I do. Now, it's a spin-down die, so it's not tournament legal.
Oh, geez.
But I think it'll be okay.
Okay. We'll try it. All right. So we're just going to roll 20-sided dice. Who gets to talk first? And here we go. I rolled a 10.
I rolled a 4.
Oh, all right. I get to go first.
10-4, good buddy.
Although, nicely done. There's a little bit of collusion this week, though, because I think each of us would be remiss if we overlooked probably one of the biggest nerd topics to come up in a very, very long time.
Mm-hmm.
And that is Disney buying Lucasfilm.
Oh, yeah.
So much to talk about with this, Aaron. So Disney bought Lucasfilm for, I think, $4.5 billion or something.
Yep.
And they announced that in 2015, Star Wars Episode 7 will be released, and there'll be a new Star Wars film every 2 to 3 years after that.
That's staggering.
Why?
I mean, because I had given up.
Yeah.
The dream that there would ever be, I mean, I was expecting maybe some television shows, maybe when I was an old man and George Lucas is dead and the rights had expired and his kids had squandered all the money and they're desperate looking to cash in,
yeah,
we would get another Star Wars. But to think that, you know, that it's going to be hitting right in my, you know, my son's going to be right prime. He's going to be like 9 years old when that comes out.
Oh,
I'm
geez.
Super excited.
I'm super stoked, man. I think that this is, there are a lot of people who are poo-pooing this and saying that, why do they have to do this? I just think that this is a great move by everyone involved.
Yeah, how can you poo-poo this? I mean, Star Wars is as low as it can get right now.
Exactly.
So it's like, they can't fuck it up anymore. And this is this is the same house that has given a serious director and serious, you know, a history and Hollywood talent to a goddamn theme ride.
Right.
So you're telling me they can't get a bunch of artists who are passionate about Star Wars?
Mm-hmm.
Come on.
And who isn't? I mean, Star Wars is so referential within movie culture, within pop culture. This is one thing that George Lucas has done right, is he's kind of let a lot of copyright infringe-y stuff slide in terms of, because it's such a bankroll, dude. He makes tons of money off the merchandise and off the movies. So, you know, there's a lot of fan films for Star Wars. There was like the Chad Vader web series, which I loved. There's a lot. It's something that he's done really right is let the fans embrace this. So you see Star Wars pop up in things like, you know, Kevin Smith's Clerks. One of the most memorable parts of that is when they talk about the contract workers in Return of the Jedi and the Death Star.
Indeed.
And also Edgar Wright in his space series. There was a lot of Star Wars references in that. And the list goes on and on. So I think I want to start this conversation. They're going to be making this movie it's going to be released in 2015. They're passing the reins on to a new creative team. And mind you, this is Disney, so I trust them. Because what they've done with the Marvel Universe since taking it over, they've just knocked home runs out of the park. I don't know if you'd agree with that. I mean, putting Joss Whedon in charge of the Avengers was a great idea. Kenneth Branagh on Thor was a great idea. Jon Favreau directing Iron Man was a great idea. They're doing a really good job with this. So I don't know if you – I've got some ideas, but I don't know if you have any ideas who you think you would like to see lead this new Star Wars trilogy.
I would like to see director Brad Bird.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think he would be an awesome person because I think he's passionate about geek subjects. I mean, he's the man behind The Incredibles.
Right.
The man behind Up. He actually just directed a live action one this year. Yeah. The new Mission Impossible.
Right. Mission Impossible 4, Ghost Protocol, which was a pretty damn good movie.
You turn this guy loose on Star Wars, watch out.
Yeah, and I think Brad Bird's really good. And you know, he's worked with Pixar. He also did The Iron Giant, I think.
One of my favorites.
Which is an excellent movie. And like I said, he's kind of on the payroll a little bit with Disney.
He's on the Disney payroll. You're right. That's fair to say.
Because he's straight out of Pixar. And there's actually some rumors floating around. There's this big sci-fi project. It's rumored to be a multi-hundreds of millions of dollars project, a tentpole movie called 1952, which is being developed by Brad Bird and Damon Lindelof, who worked on Lost and is kind of one of J.J. Abrams' offspring. And when I heard about this, these two guys were two people that immediately came to mind because, I mean, I would love to see J.J. Abrams do this, but he's doing Star Trek. You can't have that guy doing Star Trek to Star Wars. That's
no, I would I would take to the streets if that were to happen.
Right. The nerds' heads would explode, right?
You got to take a stand, and you can like them both, but you have to prefer one or the other.
Right, right. So that's not going to happen. But Damon Lindelof is kind of his offspring. So so there's a speculation that this secret project called 1952, which started, you know, is going in the works earlier in 2011. It was actually Star Wars Episode 7, and that these two guys were already working on it. Those rumors have been debunked, but I still think this is the type of team you'd want to put together. Damon Lindelof and Brad Bird would be a great combo.
Agreed.
You know, another director that I think would be good. His name's been brought up, and I think he might get the billing, especially if Brad Bird's working on this 1952 project. Is Andrew Stanton, who also came out of Pixar. He directed John Carter earlier this year,
which I've heard was not, if you get over the hype and all that, was not a bad movie.
It wasn't that bad. I watched it. There were some ridiculous parts of it, but it's about a cowboy who goes to Mars and there's a bunch of aliens there.
Sure.
So you're starting off, it's a little, you're starting off a little behind in that whole thing. But Andrew Stanton, you know, he wrote Toy Story 3. He's behind WALL-E. He's behind Finding Nemo. He's behind Monsters Incorporated. He's behind A Bug's Life. So he's also kind of on the Disney. He's definitely on the Disney payroll. And he could take on a giant project like this. I think you probably want to bring in other writers, but I think that he could definitely helm that. And I think he probably learned some stuff on John Carter and Mars that can be applied. So I think Brad Bird and Andrew Stanton are kind of the two spot on guys that you'd think off right off the bat. I think that you can immediately dismiss people like Guillermo del Toro. Probably not going to happen.
I wouldn't like to see his take on it, too.
You wouldn't want to see it as a Guillermo del Toro movie.
Yeah, I'd like to see him spin it off in a different direction. But for your main Star Wars canon, I don't think he'd be a good fit. His look and feel.
Yeah, and then you know, Peter Jackson's another name that kind of came up. What's her name? I think her name's Kathleen Kennedy or Catherine Kennedy is the person who took over LucasArts. Mm-hmm. And she's produced a ton of Steven Spielberg movies. Mm-hmm. So possibly you could see Steven Spielberg stepping in, but I don't think he would want to do that, especially with kind of what happened with Indiana Jones 4.
And honestly, I think his time has come and gone too. I don't really want any Lucas-y, Spielberg-y fingers on these projects. They have lost, in my mind, what it means to be Indiana Jones and what it means to be Star Wars.
Absolutely. And so from that perspective, I think you kind of need somebody a little fresher, somebody who hasn't done as many movies maybe, and maybe get some guidance from some people. So like I mentioned before, Kevin Smith, Edgar Wright, both have had referential works to Star Wars within their own works. I don't think Edgar Wright's the right person for this. And I obviously don't think Kevin Smith should do it. I wouldn't mind seeing.
Oh, God, no.
No. Although I wouldn't mind Kevin Smith kind of being in on the script a little bit.
And I wouldn't mind seeing him take another. Like, in my mind, there's lots of Star Wars properties here.
Right.
There's the main canon branch.
Right.
And there's room for Kevin Smith to play on in the suburbs. But I don't want him anywhere near the main spotlight.
Right. And I just also want to write off Christopher Nolan. I don't think this is his realm. I think he's taking over DC.
Yeah.
We don't need to see it, Christopher Nolan. I think that there are a couple directors that are really in there that I think would be perfect. And my number one choice, I know you're sitting on the edge of your seat, is Woody Allen. No, I'm just joking. My number one choice is Joe Cornish, who directed Attack the Block.
I've not seen that.
Oh, my God. Hey, Ron.
I know. I'm sorry.
Attack the Block is my favorite movie of the last decade. It's like in my top five. Well, that's not really true.
Really?
Attack the Block is in my top five movies of all time.
Really?
It's in there with Back to the Future. It's in there with The Big Lebowski. It's like right in there.
Wow.
I cannot get enough of this movie. Plus, Attack the Block, a lot of practical effects. All the aliens in that movie were guys in suits.
That's true.
But they made it look cool. They didn't look like guys in suits, but they were guys in suits. And I think we need to get back to practical effects, obviously.
I think a healthy mix of both. You can't go exclusively digital. That's one of the things that killed the soul of the Star Wars prequel trilogy.
Absolutely. Nobody watches the original Star Wars movie and they're like, oh, Chewbacca's totally a guy in a suit.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, that suit's not even good.
No.
It's not even a good suit.
In fact, the improved Chewbacca in the prequels looked like ass, I thought.
He looked terrible.
Yeah.
So Joe Cornish is at the top of my list. And then number two would be Rian Johnson, who just directed Looper. Huge buzz coming off of Rian Johnson. He's got an indie cred that stretches back. His first film was Brick. A lot of people really like Brick. I didn't really like it. He's directed a couple episodes of Breaking Bad.
Mm-hmm.
He did The Brothers Bloom. But really, Looper was kind of his breakout movie. And I think he's ready. I think that he would also be really good. I think you need somebody who's kind of on the verge, who's done a couple of things, kind of like what they did with X-Men First Class. I can't remember who the director was of that, but it's kind of along those lines. You need somebody who's up and coming and wants to make this their own and create this world themselves.
Who was the guy that he did The Usual Suspects and the new Superman?
Are you talking about which one?
The one that did the first X-Men.
Well, I think that was Matthew. Well, Matthew Vaughn directed X-Men First Class.
Oh, that's what you're the one that you're talking
about.
Yeah.
But the original X-Men, I can bring this up real fast. He was Bryan Singer.
Yes. Who I've heard is coming back to do another X-Men.
He's doing the next X-Men movie.
After he crapped out on Superman, which I could stand another Bryan Singer X-Men.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, X-Men 3 was terrible, but X-Men 1 and 2 were awesome.
Indeed.
So, Joe Cornish is my number one choice. I think he'd be awesome. I think Rian Johnson would also be awesome. Do you have anybody else, do you think?
No, like I said, I think you eliminated all the popular fanboy stuff, and I can't think, anybody but Brad Bird.
Yeah, well, I mean, and like I said, I don't think Edgar Wright is the right person for this, but I would love to see him on a script.
Mm-hmm.
I would actually love to see Kevin Smith on a script. Kevin Smith's Superman movie was great. Kevin Smith knows the material, and he's not going to fuck it up.
And, if you've got an editor to curb his worst impulses, the man is a master of dialogue.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which has traditionally been one of the weaknesses of Star Wars.
Oh, my God. That's the one thing you don't want is, like, ton of dialogue, no action.
Right.
You want fun action and dialogue that moves the story along. Now we come to the next part, which is the episode 7 story. Obviously, I'm not going to ask you to come up with the story off the top of your head.
Oh, I probably could.
Are there characters from the original trilogy that you want to see, that you have to see in episode 7?
You know, I don't know, because how much of the EU are you familiar with, the expanded universe?
Minimal.
Okay.
Minimal.
Because I was going to take it, and this is your topic, so I'll stay away from it. Unless they're going to do one of the EU kind of storylines that are already out there,
mm-hmm.
I would prefer them to go away from the original prequel and original trilogy characters, except for maybe R2-D2 and C-3PO. I think that it would be sacrilege for those droids not to be in a Star Wars movie.
Well, they are the unofficial narrators and the comic relief in the original trilogy.
Yes.
And they're the first characters that you see in Star Wars.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's something they got away from in the prequels. And it doesn't need to be an epic story. That's the thing. Like, Star Wars is not an epic story. The original Star Wars New Hope is not an epic story. It's a very straightforward story that's fun, compact, action-packed, and it's a rip-roaring ride. That's what you want Star Wars to be. You don't want it to be some kind of... That's what the prequels were, this like epic, sweeping story that everybody knew the ending to. Mm-hmm. Like, these need to be fun, action-packed movies. That's another one, as I was thinking, it was Gore Verbinski who did Pirates of the Caribbean.
Mm.
He's also in Disney's pocket, and I think you have to see him as a front runner, especially with The Lone Ranger coming out, which could be a huge box office smash next year.
And I like him because he brings a lot of artisans to his craft, just like Peter mm-hmm. Jackson. Yep. You know, you want someone that's sweating the fact that the Rohirrim wouldn't have welded armor. They'd have riveted armor because they're based on Viking Norse. I mean, you want someone that's that into the fictional culture that they're going to fight for minor details like that. Mm-hmm. So the big picture stuff is just going to click.
Right. Right. And I think, like I said, if they could keep these things compact, fun, Star Trek did a great job with that. J.J. Abrams did a great job with Star Trek in that regard. It was a rip-roaring fun movie. And I can't wait for the next one. And mm-hmm. if they can do anything like that with Star Wars, I think that they'll hit a home run. Are there any characters that you'd like to see come back? Or because personally, I want to see...
Outside of the droids, man. Not again, unless they're going to do one of the classic EU storylines, mm-hmm. like the Thrawn trilogy or mess with the Yuuzhan Vong. I can't think of... Yeah, even Chewbacca, I thought he felt very forced in the prequels. It gave me a very bad taste in my mouth.
I mean, that was the problem with the prequels. Boba Fett was forced in the prequels. Mm-hmm. I think the fact that every stormtrooper is a clone of Boba Fett is the weirdest thing ever.
It really is.
I think that they kind of killed Boba Fett. I know that he survives the Sarlacc pit, but why don't we just leave him there for the next movies?
Sure.
I would kind of like to see like minor characters like Lando pop up. And I would love to see cameos. Like, why not? Set it like 3-4 decades later and have Han Solo in there and have Harrison Ford do a little cameo.
Of course. Yeah. I think that's, if you're going to do it, that's the way to go. And I think the Yuuzhan Vong, you know, Dark Jedi stuff would be the way to go because those are set like 30 years after the original trilogy. And, you know, John Hamill. Mark Hamill and Harrison Ford, they're all the perfect age to play that.
Is that is that the one where like there's a planet destroying plant army thing?
Yeah, kind of like an organic, non-technological using superpower that's also immune to the Force.
Oh, so it's kind of like the Flood in Halo.
Yeah, and it's got some really dark beats. Mm-hmm. For example, the climax of the first movie, if they followed it, Chewbacca would actually die.
Oh, geez.
Spoiler alert.
Well, I mean, that's...
But can you imagine how dark that would be?
Yeah, that would be pretty rough. And that's what the one thing we also have to realize is that Star Wars movies are kids' movies.
I don't know that I believe that.
They are, dude.
I think they should be kid-friendly, but I was terrified, pants-shitting terrified of Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah, that's true. And, like, the whole thing, like, when Luke is in the ice cave and he's going to get eaten... That was terrifying.
I mean, yeah, I thought the Empire Strikes Back was scary as a 6-year-old. I mean, Luke got his hand cut off. Bad guys got their asses kicked.
I couldn't even watch it when his hand got cut off when I was a little kid.
Like you said, the Wampa, man. Yes. There's this guy just, you know, mowing down on a leftover Tauntaun, and Luke's helpless.
Plus, can we... and there's the part where Han cuts open the Tauntaun.
Oh, and the guts spill out?
Yeah, the guts spill out. And can we, this is often overlooked, but people always overlook the scene where Luke totally hallucinates Darth Vader on Dagobah.
Oh, yeah.
And he cuts off his head, and his mask falls off, and it's Luke's face inside.
I mean, I'm not saying kids can't handle that, but that's the thing. Like, I resent people saying, well, it's got to be a kid's movie. Bullshit. Yeah. It can be an adult movie that kids can enjoy.
I think you're right, Aaron.
And vice versa.
I think you're right. Do you have anything else to talk about this?
I have a ton.
Okay.
So a lot of the other ideas in the expanded universe, they took a couple of novels in a horror realm. where they had like zombie stormtroopers. Do you think zombies are too played out now, or could they actually have a horror genre?
I'm not a big fan of zombie crossovers.
Really?
I like zombies by themselves in their own universe. I just watched Cabin in the Woods. I love that movie. It's got zombies in it in a real good way. But zombie crossovers, I'm not a big fan of.
Okay, how about this? Like, kind of like a Das Boot. Something that focuses on like Krix Madin or some of the other noble imperial officers or units that, you know, were loyal to the Empire and saw the rebels as a terrorist band, but we kind of get that perspective of the ones that, you know, they're not really bad or evil. Think of like Tom Cruise from the Valkyrie movie or the captain from Das Boot. They're just soldiers doing their order, trying to protect their friends and family and loved ones from the rebels. Do you think that, you know, a series, maybe a television series or a HBO miniseries, do you think that would play?
I would love that. I would love a Star Wars naval centric military show. And you got to get Admiral Ackbar in there. Ackbar is one of my faves.
I also would like to see, like, you know, some more it's a study, you know, because I guess I find the Imperials the more fascinating characters. And I would love to see, you know, some kind of in the trenches perspective of when the clone troopers were running out and they started conscripting, like, you know, just normal people for stormtroopers. What, you know, like the clone troopers thought of that. Like, I'm thinking it's like the episode of Band of Brothers called The Replacements. You know, there had to be a lot of, you know, bumpy roads to go from an all clone that's essentially everyone's the same person, the same heritage,
right,
the same outlook, to now these guys are just, you know, you get your head shaved and you're in a piece of white armor and you call yourself a stormtrooper now.
Yeah. I think that's pretty good. I love the idea. I know I talked about not having Boba Fett in the movie, but I think it would be cool if it was 30 years in the future that, like, Boba Fett comes in, but you, like, don't know it's Boba Fett because it's just some old, grizzled, like, veteran dude, and he's, like, in his 60s, and he ends up helping out, and then the big reveal is that he's actually Boba Fett. Something like that could be cool.
Yeah, or like, you know, some more, again, getting away from the main Star Wars canon, investigate the Mandalores, who Boba Fett, I guess, was the leader of.
Right.
See about their culture and what they did off bounty hunting and skullduggering at the edges of the galaxy.
And then you could actually have that big elephant creature that's on their patches.
Yeah.
Like that crazy tusked creature that's on their emblem. That'd be neat.
You know, the other thing about Disney acquiring Lucasfilm is they also got LucasArts.
That's true.
And I'm thinking of all the classic Scum Engine video games like Full Throttle, Sam & Max, Monkey Island.
Yep.
How awesome would it be to see movies of those?
Yeah, Dave.
I mean, they literally write themselves.
Yeah. And unfortunately, they released a report that they're not really – they did acquire that, but they're not moving forward with any new projects, which – pumps me up because I love Star Wars Battlefront, and I think Battlefront 3 needs to come out and be a first-person shooter Star Wars game that is awesome. Like, please, somebody do that. But I am a big fan of those point-and-click adventures from the mid-90s.
And I'm thinking, turn Pixar loose on a hard PG-13 version of Sam & Max.
Oh my god, I love Sam & Max.
That would be so hilarious.
I am so happy that you know what Sam & Max is. I try to talk about Sam & Max to people, and they have no idea what it is.
The original Sam & Max are some of the funniest belly laughs I've ever had on anything.
Sam & Max Hit the Road, dude. That is a great game. That's kind of the first full game that I played all the way through when I was, like, in third grade. I love that game. Stoked.
So, and then, you know, speaking of other properties that they are being strangely mum about, they also acquired the rights to Indiana Jones.
Yeah.
There is some entanglement with Paramount, but nothing that $250 million probably could solve. And I wonder if they could resurrect that series.
Yeah, they've announced that they're not really worried about that right now. They're worried about Star Wars.
Sure. But I'm talking, this is going to be, you got a vision 10, 20, 15, 20 years down and, you know, start over the brand, make Indiana Jones, you know, George Lucas pitched to Steven Spielberg the idea of Indiana Jones because famously they were both exhausted after, I think Lucas was filmed at just gotten filming Empire And Spielberg had just got done releasing Jaws, and they went to on a family vacation to Hawaii, and it was just them two building sandcastles on the beach. And Lucas, I'm not making this up, Lucas asked Spielberg, what's he going to do next? And he's like, you know what? I've always wanted to direct a 007, a James Bond movie. And Lucas said, I got something even better. It's called Indiana Jones. Why not make Indiana Jones like James Bond's? Every 10 years, you get some new dude and tell new adventures.
I love the idea. I love it. I don't know how you can do that and keep it historical, though.
Well, I mean, what do you mean? Because you can just, keep telling...
That was a big problem, is that, like, the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull was supposed to be, like, a 50s B-movie. Like, that's... And George Lucas
They fucked up by going away from the Nazis and the cult. They need that. They got the Spear of Destiny.
Get out of the atomic era. Get back in World War II.
Yeah, or even go maybe even a little bit younger. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's lots of play space in the Indiana Jones timeline where you could have, you know, really cool stuff. Like, how cool would an Indiana Jones mummy movie be?
Yeah, that's what I was just thinking, like King Tut type of thing.
Yeah. It touches on your, like, last week's show about the movie monsters. You could, like, satisfy both itches with one awesome series.
Yeah. Well, Aaron, we're running a little long here, so I think we got to move on. But we could obviously talk about this for the entire show.
Of course.
It's big nerd news, and it might come back up. If you have something, listener, that you want to talk about in terms of this big Star Wars Lucasfilm Disney deal, please let us know. Email personalarrogance@gmail.com. Tweet at us @personalpodcast. Please give us a call. We love it when you call us, and we always put it on the cast. 360-362-0024. Best ways to get in touch with us. And now we need to move on to some trivia. Are you excited for trivia, Aaron?
I'm scared of trivia. This 84 edition is 84 or 87?
I think it's 81.
81 is brutal.
It is brutal.
We get pop culture. It's just... Phew.
Yeah, I think we kind of officially veto pop culture.
Okay, cool.
I rolled a 6. Sports and leisure. This is right up our alley, Aaron.
All right.
Okay, here we go. Your question. Here we go. Please play along at home. What is the lowest ranking suit in bridge?
Spade?
I'm going to go club. It's clubs.
All right.
This one's
I'd
for
have
me.
To call my grandma to ask her that question.
This one's for me. Who played for the Chicago Bears, Houston Oilers, and Oakland Raiders in a 26-year pro football career? I'm going to say Jim Brown.
I'm going to say Dick Butkus.
George Blanda.
Oh.
All right, Aaron, this one's for you. I'm up 1-0. Here you go. What playing card symbolizes death?
The Jack of Spades. I'm going to stick with Spades here.
All right, I'm going to go with the King of Hearts. The Ace of Spades. The Ace of Spades!
Well, it makes sense because, you know, the Undertaker's got, or the Grave Digger's got the spade.
That's true.
Taking the under.
And he's really good at spading. He's the ace of spades.
He is.
All right. Aaron, you need this one to win. I want King of Hearts because it's a suicide king.
Mm.
But all right, here we go. I get to answer first, but you need the steel to tie. Here we go. Who is the victim of the murder in the game of Clue? I know it's Mr. Black?
It's Mr. Body.
Mr. Body. You got it.
Boom.
He's the one who's not a color.
Yes, because he's a corpse.
All right, so it's a geography tiebreaker. The person who is geographically closest to the answer wins. Aaron, you get to answer first. Where are the Nazca lines, the N-A-Z-C-A lines, the Nazca lines?
That would be in South America.
South America? I'm going to go with Argentina. Peru.
Well, you're probably closer because I just took the whole continent, right?
Yeah. Let's do one more. I totally cheated on that one. Here we go.
It's so much fun.
I know. What U.S. state hosts the world champion chili cook-off every fall? You get to answer first.
Is it mine? I'm going to say Springfield, Illinois.
I'm going to go with Indiana. Texas.
Ooh. I actually have no idea who's closest.
Well, I think that I'm going to give it to you because I know Illinois dips lower than Indiana geographically.
All right, I'll take it.
All right, cool. You win. Great job. Now you get to talk because you won the roll-off.
Oh, is that how this works?
Yeah.
All right. So I have a little topic that I want to talk about. It's the realm of sports ethics.
Okay.
So I've got a couple of topics I want to talk about. First off is, when is it acceptable to root for your team to fail? Now, some background on that is, like, last year we had the famous Suck for Luck campaign for the Colts. Mm-hmm. Peyton Manning was hurt.
Yep.
The future looked grim. An 0-16 season was on the line. The only thing we took solace in is that we could potentially get the number one pick of the draft. So we were actively rooting for our team to fail so that we could later succeed.
Yeah, and actually, for the Seahawks were in that boat for a while. We were in the Suck for Luck for, like, the first four games of the season. We ended 7-9, which is mediocreville, but
and that's what I was going to say, because now we have Luck,
right?
But unlike Peyton Manning came in, we had Tarik Glenn, we had Jeff Saturday, we had Marvin Harrison, he still went 3-13,
right?
Kind of sucked. And then we got Edgerrin James, and we came back fully loaded for a decade of excellence. The worst thing in the world is to have like an 8-8, 9-7 team, because you're in a no man's land where you're not really succeeding in the playoffs, but you're not getting those high draft picks. Should I be rooting for a 4-12 season from here on out? Would that be bad of me as a fan to root against my team for their long-term strategic success?
Well, let me speak from a Mariners fan.
Okay.
There's a pretty famous pitcher named Steven Strasburg. Came from San Diego State. Came on to the Nationals, instantly became their ace right out of college. Blew up his elbow, injured. Notwithstanding, a great pitcher. The Mariners that season were competing with the Nationals for worst record in the league. Going into the last series of the season, they were tied. The Mariners won the last series against the Oakland A's. They won two of the three games, giving themselves a better record than the Nationals, and totally omitting Steven Strasburg from coming on the roster. Instead, they got Dustin Ackley, who has done zilch so far. While Strasburg was a huge part of the Nationals making it to the playoffs this year. Mm-hmm. Do I wish that the Mariners lost that series, got swept, so that they get Steven Strasburg? Absolutely.
So you're on board with me. It's acceptable to root for your team's short-term failure for a long-term strategic success.
Well, and I think in football it's a little worse, because in football, in baseball, the draft is the draft, but there are a lot of players, and just because you have the number one pick doesn't mean that much. Football, I think the number one pick has a pretty big impact on the way that things shake out. Okay. I think that Reggie Bush was number two pick, but he went to New Orleans. New Orleans offense became great. They win a Super Bowl. Peyton Manning was the number one overall pick, wasn't he?
Yes, he was.
Yeah.
Ryan Leaf is number two.
Yeah. Well, as a Washington State fan, that's a MIG. So I think in football, it's a little lame to reward the worst team in the league with the number one draft pick. I think that instead of having the Pro Bowl every year, you have an All-American team, or like your Pro Bowl team, but you don't actually play the game. The game is the game between the two worst teams, and whoever wins the game gets the number one draft pick.
I like it. It's like the opposite of the Hall of Fame game.
Exactly. These are the worst two teams. It's the Suck Bowl, and it happens the week before the Super Bowl, and the winner gets the number one draft pick.
I fully endorse that idea.
So guess what?
We should make it happen.
You have to win now. You have to win to get the number one draft pick.
So you root for the failure. You root to get into the bottom two, but then when it's all on the line, you got to play for it. I like it.
Yeah, and two crappy teams, it's always a fun game to watch. It's like,
Go ahead.
You know, you got to love two crappy teams playing against each other. Either you're going to have a ton of offense or no offense. There's going to be a defensive stalwart battle. Yeah, I love it.
Let me ask you this. So to what extent can you root against your rival team? You know, I'm pretty okay with obviously heckling the players.
Right.
Heckling fans that have the temerity to walk on into your home turf wearing the rival colors. That's, you know, all good fun.
Yeah.
Obviously, physical violence I can't condone.
Right.
What's your opinion of cheering when opposing players get injured? Is that out of bounds?
I think it's the degree of the injury.
Okay. Like a blown ACL.
Blown ACL is pretty rough. That's rough justice.
I mean, obviously, like a neck paralysis, yeah. You'd have to be a pretty sick puppy.
Sick person. I
dislocated shoulder, out for 4 to 6 weeks.
Dislocated shoulder's fine to me.
Okay.
Especially if it's turf toe's hilarious. I love turf toe. Turf toe is the weirdest thing in the world. I can't admit, like, nobody gets turf toe except for, I don't even know what it is.
Well, the thing is I don't think anyone will ever get it because it used to be endemic to the AstroTurf, which was basically indoor-outdoor carpeting over a half inch of foam and concrete.
Right.
So you'd go to plant and your foot would stick and someone would land on it wrong and bam, all of a sudden you got turf toe.
But what is turf toe? Is it like a broken toe?
I think it's like a dislocated big toe.
Ugh.
Yeah.
Well, turf toe's hilarious, so always root for turf toe.
ACL, you think that's a borderline, or are you saying it's definitely no?
ACL's no good. I actually have Mariners first-hand experience for this.
Okay.
I was at a game earlier this year. Felix Hernandez is pitching against the Yankees. It was one of Ichiro's last games in Seattle. He's playing for the Yankees. A-Rod gets up to bat. I don't know if you know about how much Seattle people hate A-Rod.
Sure.
Because he was our guy, came up through our system, left Seattle to go to Texas on a $252 million contract.
Seattle is the farm team for the rest of the league.
Don't give me that.
We know that.
Well, you know, Aaron, at least we have a team. so everybody hates A-Rod. To this day, this happened over 10 years ago. To this day, whenever A-Rod plays in Seattle, people boo him. Like, people hate A-Rod. He's the most hated person in Seattle sports. Felix Hernandez runs a fastball in on him, hits his hand, breaks it. He's out 4 to 6 weeks. Mm-hmm. It was kind of great.
All right. So you think that's definitely, you know, again, not a career ender.
Not a career ender. It's 4 to 6 weeks.
That's something that's going to affect his long-term health.
And the guy's a douche. It has to do with that, too. Like, if Drew Brees comes into Seattle and blows and dislocates his shoulder, I'm not feeling good. I think Drew Brees is a good guy.
Right.
But if a guy that you hate comes in and, you know, T.O. in his prime when he played for San Fran, playing in Seattle on Monday night, signed a football and then gave it to someone in the stands. If he dislocates his shoulder on the next play, I'm pretty happy about that.
What about cheering when your own players get injured?
Like Matt Cassel?
That's what recently happened in Kansas City. If you're that disillusioned with your franchise, the people that own it are morons, your head coach is lost, your quarterback is a clown, he gets hurt and there's derisive cheering, is that crossing a boundary?
It's totally crossing a boundary.
Really?
Yeah. First of all, why the hell are you at the game if you hate your team so much?
That's a good question.
Yeah. Why are you paying $60 for a ticket, $20 for a beer, $30 for parking if you hate your team so much?
Well, let me ask you this. What's the true fan, diehard fan's choice when management is basically flinging poo at you week after week?
Don't buy tickets. This is the problem.
goes against the diehard credo, man. They want to be involved.
Watch it on TV.
Don't give them
money. I mean, I guess they could move away. That'd be sucky, but you need to vote with your dollars. This is America, people.
How much time I got left? Because I got one.
We can do a quick one here.
All right. What are your thoughts on teams taking their colors and records with them when they move? Now, I mean, I love the Colts. I bleed blue. I love the horseshoe. Mm-hmm. But it was a pretty raw deal us stealing them from Baltimore.
Right.
And now it seems like the modern era, you have to leave those back in the home city and then start a new crappy team like the Titans or the Houston Texans.
Yeah. And this is another first-hand Seattle experience because the Sonics left.
That's why I'm excited to talk to you about it.
Well, they went to OKC.
That's a fresh wound.
But they left the Sonics name and colors here in Seattle,
which basically leaves you hope. It's like leaving hope in a town.
Right. But what they did not do is they did not give us their champion, the history of the Sonics. It's a shared history. So if the Oklahoma City Thunder want to put up a 1977 World Championship banner in their arena, I don't know if they've done that, but they can, because the Supersonics share that history with them, which is stupid.
Yeah, I think that Bob Irsay was a douchebag, the ones that stole the Colts from Baltimore. I think Jim Irsay is as classy as he can in the situation, because we pretend like we didn't have that championship. We don't have championship bangers hanging in the Lucas Oil Stadium. When we won our Super Bowl, we treated it like it was our first Super Bowl.
Yeah, and that's the way you got to do it. I mean,
I think so.
And there's a great, have you watched the documentary, the ESPN documentary 30 for 30 on the Colts marching band?
I did. Yeah.
It's a good one.
They're still, they still are in Baltimore, even though they're Ravens.
Yeah. And it's a great documentary, and it really kind of tells its story. And as a person who, you know, in Seattle, you know, we got the arena deal done. We're probably going to get the Sacramento Kings, rip them away from Sacramento. As a Seattle sports fan, I'm pretty jaded to that, and I don't really care as long as we get the Sonics back because we went through it. But at the same time, it's, I feel sorry for the people in Sacramento, especially a town that doesn't have a baseball team. They don't have a football team. They don't even have an MLS team.
And, they're in California. I don't feel that bad for them.
Yeah, and they're Sacramento.
I mean, they have multiple successful championship-winning sports teams they can root for in-state.
There
so
might be a couple of Giants fans in Sacramento is what you're saying.
I just think that, like, if the Colts left, like, if we went to L.A. back in the 90s, I would have been furious. And if they took the horseshoe with them, I would have been pissing blood. I don't know if that's not, I don't, I think that's where you just become a sports widow. Like, you're never going to fall in love with another team again.
Well,
that would hurt
what,
so bad.
And guess what I've done with the NBA? I'm done.
Yeah.
I don't give a shit about the NBA.
When the Sonics come back, are you going to get back in?
Yeah,
or
absolutely.
Is it still just too jaded?
No, when they come back, I'll be fine with it. But there seems to be this consensus that that everybody in Seattle become Portland Trailblazers fans. That's like
dumb.
Yeah, that's like saying that the Colts leave and everybody's a Patriots fan. Like that's our biggest basketball rival.
And
now we're
never
supposed to be
had
fans
because there's still a huge pocket of Bears fans and Bengals fans in Indiana because before the Colts came in 84 or 83, that was your choice.
Yeah.
But it's hard to go back and just be like, "Oh yeah, I'll just vote for the other regional person." You know,
no.
Come on.
No. And especially like, dude, the Blazers are like They're a number one rival.
Right.
Seattle teams hate Portland teams.
Right.
All right. Well,
I mean, sports are weird. It's like we're basically rooting for laundry, right?
Yeah, I mean, you are. It's like a bunch of people who actually aren't from the town you're from.
Uh-huh.
You have no personal connection to them, except that when they play, they have the name of the city you live in on their chest.
Yeah, and they have the right color fabric. And
exactly.
The Thunder now has the wrong color of fabric, and you hate them.
Yeah, but then there's so much bad blood. I mean, going to the finals last year, it's like...
Well, the good news is it sounds like they've completely flushed their chances to win a Western Conference, let alone a title with this James Harden move. So you can at least take some...
You got KD,
light in that.
You got Kevin Durant.
Yeah,
the Durantula.
But so what?
yeah, and I mean, with the Lakers are, you know, Kobe, Steve Nash, Pau Gasol, Dwight Howard, and Meta World Peace are your starting five.
Yeah, who's the one that murdered my beloved franchise, the Pacers?
God, I remember
Meta World
that
Peace
day.
My ass.
I will remember that day. I remember exactly where I was the day that the brawl broke out with it.
Me too.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
I was, like, standing in the food line at my college, just, like, mouth agape watching this.
And we absolutely would have won the title that year. We were stacked. The rest of the league was weak, and we were rolling. And he just is a psycho. He's the Michael Myers of the NBA. He killed in cold blood an entire franchise as the world looked on in horror.
Well, I got to say is Jermaine O'Neal's got a great right hook, too.
She sure did. And when it comes to punching fat guys, that is who you want on your team.
All right, we got to move on. My second topic this week, I don't know if you know this, Aaron, but the election's next week.
I do know this.
Yeah, and I am super excited about this election because when it's over, they'll stop. There won't be any ads on about it anymore. That's what I'm most excited about. I've already voted. I don't know if they're early voting in Indiana, but Washington, it's all vote by mail.
They do, but you're only early voting. That's shocking and weird.
Well, we're only vote by mail.
Right.
So I voted 2 weeks ago. I'm done.
So weird.
Votes are in.
I'm looking forward to leaving work early Tuesday.
Yeah.
Exercising my democratic right and then going to my house and getting drunk early.
See, I have no idea why Election Day isn't a modified national holiday.
Yeah, it'd be cool.
Like the post office should still be open because there is vote by mail.
Sure.
But everything else should be closed and you should get the day off of work.
I agree. If the point of this country is to take democracy seriously, something like that would probably happen.
It's like Columbus Day, really? Columbus Day and not Election Day?
Right.
Like, you should get the day off to go vote. It's a no-brainer. I don't understand
it. I agree. Totally.
But there are a ton of ads on, and I'm now impartial because I've already voted. So I'm unswingable, and I live in a non-swing state. But I just want to play this campaign ad for you because I think that this kind of shows us so many things about the election landscape today, and I just need to talk to you about it. So here goes my favorite election ad of the 2012 campaign.
Kristi Noem, Matt Varelek. Radically different backgrounds, radically different visions for South Dakota. 1997, Arizona. Matt Varelek gets a degree in environmental studies and starts teaching at the Biosphere 2, known as an incubator for radical environmental ideas. Back in South Dakota, Kristi Noem is named Outstanding Young Farmer of the Year by the Watertown JCs. 1999, Matt Varelek earns a master's degree at the University of Glasgow, Scotland, and is named a greenhouse gas emissions broker for NatSource, a company that profits from cap-and-trade energy taxes. Ooh. 2000, Matt Varelek authors a document advocating a global cap-and-trade scheme, while Kristi Noem is managing the family farm in Hamlin County. 2001, Varelek attends Cambridge University in England for additional environmental study. Varelek goes to Marrakesh, Morocco, promoting a global cap-and-trade plan at a United Nations Global Warming Summit. Back in South Dakota, Kristi is living in Castlewood, farming, raising a family, helping to balance the books and manage a family restaurant. 2003, Matt Varelek is in Milan, Italy, speaking at another UN Global Warming Summit. Back in South Dakota, Kristi Noem receives the South Dakota Young Leader Award from the South Dakota Soybean Association. 2004, Matt Varelek leaves his job as policy director for NatSource to become a Washington, D.C. political staffer. 2006, Matt Varelek hosts a raucous National Corn Dog Day party in his swanky D.C. neighborhood, serving more than 1,000 corn dogs, 1,200 beers, and a 150-pound ice luge for consuming shots of Jägermeister.
Yeah!
2006, Kristi Noem wins a seat in the state legislature representing northeastern South Dakota in Pierre. Sioux Falls, 2008, Matt Varelek is back corn dogging again, defending his title as one of the few to achieve a triple-double for his beer and corn dog consumption. As for Kristi Noem in 2008, well, she was still looking out for South Dakota taxpayers and still representing her friends and neighbors in the legislature.
Is this
Matt
for real?
Varelek,
yeah.
Or Kristi Noem? Radical ideas or South Dakota common sense? Who do you trust to represent South Dakota? Paid for by the South Dakota Republican Party.
I can't vote for Matt Varelek harder or fast enough.
I know. I don't understand this at all. It's like...
They make him sound like Jason fucking Bourne.
Exactly. Matt Varelek is awesome.
And Batman. Cross.
He's got an international master's degree. He's spoken at the UN. He's worked in Washington, D.C. He can eat. He achieved a triple-double in corndog and beer
consumption. He has a luge that dispenses Jaeger bombs, man.
I don't understand why they're in South Dakota. Do people hate corndogs and beer in South Dakota? You'd think that would be like a center of corndogs and beer. If there was a corn dogs and beer museum, it would be in South Dakota.
Yeah, I mean, I guess if South Dakota politicians primarily are concerned with family farms and balancing the family checkbooks, then you should vote for the Kristi person. But if you want badass international man of mystery, I think it's pretty clear that you want Matt Varelek.
I don't understand it. And you gotta look at the YouTube and watch this video because it is like Jason Bourne. Like it's like Carmen San Diego. They're like moving around the planet, and then there's like a little picture, and then he's talking at UN global summits. Well, Kristi Varelek is helping manage the family restaurant.
Kristi Varelek never been on an airplane. What the hell?
I don't understand it. So, yes, election season is coming up, and I've already voted on everything. But I don't know, man. I don't like to get too political on this show, and I know that you and I are not completely eye to eye on political issues, which is totally fine, right?
But we're reasonable.
We're reasonable, and I just think that anti-intellectualism is like a ridiculous part of this country.
No, I agree. I am horrified at an ad like that, where it's basically like, vote for the country bumpkin.
Exactly.
Don't vote for a scary person who's seen the world and has been educated.
And has spoken at the UN.
And what the hell is South Dakota's common sense anyway?
I don't know what South Dakota common sense is.
Like I'm from the Midwest, where we really are fucking proud of our common sense.
Right.
But that is a little much.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and I'm just like really flabbergasted by people who are like, well, I want to find somebody who's just like me. I don't want me. I don't want somebody just like me in the White House. I want somebody who's worked to be in the White House or as a state representative for a long time, has thought this out a lot, and has worked to get to that position, just like any job. Mm-hmm. That's like saying, like, you know, the person who should be CEO of this company is someone just like me. No, the person who becomes CEO of the company is somebody who's run a company before or has worked as like a corporate vice president, like understands how to run a company, and then can be a useful member of that company.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I kind of want to get your perspective from this a little bit, because you're a swing stater.
What? When is Indiana a swing state?
Isn't it?
Not on the national. On the national ticket, Indiana is infrared, man.
Oh, really?
We did vote for Obama last year, mm-hmm. or last election cycle, mm-hmm. but I think that's just a testament to how bad the McCain campaign and the Sarah Palin thing went over.
Yeah.
I would be very shocked if we pulled that off again. I can't remember the last time Indiana voted Democrat.
Okay, I thought that it was more of a swing state than that.
No, I mean, like last year it was, but it's, you know, back in 2008 is the mm-hmm. first time I can ever remember seeing presidential election ads, because usually Indiana was like double digits for the other guy, and they didn't even bother spending one red cent advertising the state.
Wow. Yeah, actually, I'm looking at 538.com right now, and Indiana has a 99.9% chance of voting for Romney.
Yeah.
While Washington has a 100.0% chance of voting for Obama.
Right. Indiana took a chance with Barry last time, and he got that government health care for us.
Uh-huh.
You know, I don't know.
Yeah. It is. Have you seen 538.com?
No, I have not.
It's a great website. It's run by Nate Silver. It's run by that liberal bastion, the New York Times.
I bet he's flown to Europe at least once.
He might. He's probably been to Europe twice. He's probably been to mainland
God.
Europe.
How can you trust him?
And the British Isles.
Where's the South Dakota common sense in this website?
I don't know. But it's funny, because there's a lot of national media that's poo-pooing this website. Because it says that Obama has an 80.8% chance of winning. And it's all based on polling numbers. You could take a look at any state and see what the chances of Obama winning are, or Romney winning. Right now, Ohio is at 80.3% chance of an Obama win. And he's basically like the sabermetrics dude for politics. He looks at like impartial state polls and gets a bunch of information on it. So there's people who are saying, well, this is really liberally biased, right? But
why?
When he takes it,
because they're showing Obama winning.
Yeah. And because it's an 80% chance at this point. I mean, it's kind of saying that an Obama win is a sure thing.
I would be kind of shocked if he didn't win.
Yeah, it's coming.
It's not going to be a landslide, but, you know, the Electoral College being what it is, he's going to win.
Right. I mean, he's got the Electoral College advantage. I mean, Romney will probably win Florida. You know, there's that trifecta. There's Florida, Pennsylvania, Michigan. And Obama has Michigan and Pennsylvania wrapped up. Those are done. So basically all he needs to do is win Ohio, and he's got the whole thing done. And right now it's an 80% chance of winning Ohio. And a lot of people are saying, well, this is incredible, blah, blah, blah. Nate Silver did this for the 2008 election, and he got every state but one correct. So I think it works pretty well in his favor. But if you're coming up to the election, it's a very interesting website. I would recommend 538.com to people.
I am a political junkie. I'm surprised I hadn't heard of that.
Yeah, it's really neat.
And I follow like Matt Iglesias, and he's been on top of these polls for a long time. Mm-hmm. So maybe he has linked to that site and just haven't paid attention.
Yeah, it says that right now Obama's looking at getting 50.5% of the popular vote. He's looking about to nail down about 303 Electoral College votes.
Mm-hmm.
And that basically, if he wins Ohio, then the whole thing's wrapped up. Which is exactly what happened in 2004 with George W. Bush. Once he won Ohio, it was done. And that's kind of the
classic swing state.
Yeah, that's the incumbent advantage. So anyway, that's politics, baby. Politicking. I think it's time. I just want to let everybody know once again how they can get in touch with us. Please give us a call, 360-362-0024. We love it when you do that. Send us an email, personalarrogance@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter, @personalpodcast. You can also find us on Facebook. We have the Personal Arrogance Facebook page. And we post to the Bald Move page, which I can't recommend enough. I just want to say hi to all of our new likes on the Personal Arrogance page. Chris Mansfield, Carolyn Boyer, Aaron Pittman, Sean McDonald, Kevin Reed, and Greg Ross. And Aaron, you want to plug some Bald Move stuff?
Yeah, we're right smack in the middle of the rollicking season of The Walking Dead. You can follow us every Tuesday. We release about 10 o'clock in the evening, the previous or this week's episode. We also have complete coverage of all the seasons of Walking Dead, Mad Men, Justified, Game of Thrones, complete coverage for Game of Thrones, and Breaking Bad, how we got our start. So
yeah,
I like it.
Era, this is how I knew we were a match made in heaven. I went back and I listened to the first episode of Personal Arrogance today.
Yeah.
And the very first topic ever spoken about on the show is Breaking Bad.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't know, because I've been listening to you guys since the first episode, and I don't remember that.
I didn't remember that either. But we talk about Breaking Bad, and we talk about how we're really excited about The Walking Dead starting up.
Awesome.
Yeah. Pretty legit. Okay, so let's move on to some recommendations to call it a cast. What's your first reco?
Go out and shoot some guns. Okay. Last week, speaking of good Midwestern values, I went camping with the boys last weekend, and we all brought all of our guns and all of our ammo, and we each bought 3 pumpkins apiece because they're cheap this time of year.
Uh-huh.
We went out to my grandfather's 150-acre farm in southern Indiana, and we regulated on those pumpkins, and it was a great, great time.
Was there anything intact when you were done?
Oh, no. In fact, we got a little crazy. We had a bunch of partially spent those mini propane bottles.
Uh-huh.
At the end, we were shooting those and making them go, you know, and spin off and stuff.
Well, I can't wait to
do not try that at home, kids. That may or may not be dangerous.
I can't wait to come visit you in Indiana, Aaron.
Dude, if you guys ever come, I will show. It will be off the hook.
It'll be off the hizzle. I was just saying, like, that would be kind of a cool jack-o'-lantern if you just kind of riddled it with holes and then stuck a needle in it.
Well, if your idea of a jack-o'-lantern is a chunky pumpkin salsa,
mm-hmm.
because after we blew holes and basically cut it in half with the smaller ordnance, we got the 12-gauge shotguns on them and just vaporized them.
Well, there you go. Well, that's a thing. My first reco this week is going to be a movie that I watched. It's called Seeking a Friend for the End of the World. Have you heard about this movie?
That's one of Steve Carell, right?
Yeah, I watched it, and I just want to say, great date movie. It's
cool.
Got a little something for everything. I thought it was really well written. I was also slightly sauced when I watched it, so that might skew me a little bit, but I do think it was a good movie. It was surprisingly good.
Who's the female lead in that?
Keira Knightley.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I love inexplicably British people in American movies.
Now, is that on Netflix?
No, it's on Xbox Video.
Cool,
it's a rental, right. But I would say it's worth the rent. What's your second recommendation this week, Aaron?
Last week, I saw an awesome thing. It was the live riff tracking of Birdemic. Now, mm-hmm. if you're not familiar with riff tracks, just basically think it's the same guys that did Mystery Science 3000.
Yep.
And they do, you know, on rifftracks.com, they got riffing of modern movies where they just make fun of them. And every month or two or three months, they do a live riffing where they go to a location in America. They riff it live in front of a studio audience, and they beam this across the theaters in the nation. And if you go on rifftracks.com, you can look up when the next one is.
Dude, that's
tickets
awesome.
Are like $12.
Yeah.
It's a crowd full of Riff Tracks enthusiasts. They have this really cool setup where you see the movie, and you also you see the camera on their faces. They're standing up like stand-up comedians,
mm-hmm.
running along the sidebar like a four-way split screen. And you can see them, and they do, you know, it adds a lot to actually see them, and they're kind of pantomiming things.
Yeah.
Hilarious. And the best part, show up 30 minutes before the movie, and they have fake movie trivia credits and custom songs that they play that are hilarious.
I love it. I love Riff
Tracks. It's a good time.
Love Riff Tracks. Love MST3K. Love it. First Riff Tracks I saw was a Harry Potter one, which was excellent.
Oh, the first two, three Harry Potters. I got to say, though, the best Riff Tracks of all time, Twilight.
Oh, yeah?
The Twilight series are, you have to be seen to be believed.
All right. And then my final recommendation this week is going to be a winter seasonal from Windmer Brothers, and it's the Burr Winter Seasonal. It's a great batch this year, and I really recommend that you pick it up, especially if you live in Florida. Because it's good and it's available there.
And even if you live in South Dakota, it's just good. It's good sense.
Right.
Winter seasonal.
Brian Danger Finch from the Personal Arrogance Florida branch let us know that Windmer Brothers is down there. And I told him, get the burr because it's a good, good batch this year. Well, Aaron, thank you so much for joining me this week. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for hosting me.
Yeah, it was fun. We'll be back next week. Will Jesse be here? You'll just have to tune in to find out. So we'd like to remind you that wherever you go
and whatever you do,
please stay arrogant.